country's air defenses have confronted an Israeli act of aggression in the western province of Homs. The U.S. House of Representatives Speaker kicks two Republicans out of a committee she created to investigate the deadly January 6 protests on Capitol Hill. Also ahead, Colombian police arrest dozens of people following fresh nationwide protests against the government's proposed tax reform bill. Thank you for tuning in. Our top story, Syrian air defenses have intercepted several Israeli missiles over the western province of Homs. We were earlier joined by our Damascus correspondent, Mohammed Ali, who gave us more details on the incident.
Syrian state media confirmed that there has been an Israeli aggression on Syria, particularly on the city of on the governorate of Homs. The Syrian state TV also confirmed that the attack exactly targeted the area of Al-Qusair. Al-Qusair is a border town with Lebanon. It's just 8 kilometers away from northern Lebanon over there. No further details were given by any official source yet. However, usually a statement comes out from an official military source giving some detail. What we know for sure is that air defenses were activated directly with the aim of intercepting the enemy missiles. Now, this Israeli attack comes only 24 hours after a similar one in which Israel attacked yesterday the area of Al-Sfera, south of Aleppo, targeting Syrian army positions over there.
Now, a top U.S. general says Taliban militants are in control of 200 out of some 420 district centers in Afghanistan. General Mark Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, added that the militants seem to have gained a sort of strategic momentum. Last month, Milley said the militants controlled 81 district centers in Afghanistan. The American general also noted that the group had not taken over any provincial capitals but were putting pressure on the outskirts. Instead, Taliban military gains come against the backdrop of Kabul, urging the group to halt its offensive after the two sides failed to agree on a ceasefire at a peace meeting in Doha, Qatar. Tehran has unveiled a documentary film called Life Among War Flags, which narrates different aspects of conflicts between armed groups, including Taliban militants. As Salman Khajuri reports, the film has revealed a big secret called Taliban and clearly responds to questions which have for long been formed in the minds of international audiences regarding the militant group in Afghanistan.
The Iranian documentary film Life Among War Flags, which focuses on Afghanistan and the Taliban, directed by Mohsen Islamzadeh and produced by Press TV, has been unveiled in Tehran in the presence of the filmmakers. The documentary movie Life Among War Flags narrates a different story of conflicts between armed groups in Afghanistan. Moreover, it has made research on the role of the Afghan government in such conflicts.
I have been making documentaries for about 17 years now. The Life Among War Flags depicts the story of people whose region is controlled sometimes by the Taliban, sometimes by Daesh, and sometimes by a central Afghan government and the U.S. forces. I believe they are the main victims of the war in Afghanistan. Making this documentary film was very difficult because we had to risk our lives when we went among Taliban forces. We even took part in several Taliban operations to make this documentary film.
One of the special features about this documentary is that they have shown the inner side of the Taliban, which is very dangerous and difficult. Making such a documentary will definitely raise public awareness about the real nature of such groups, which is of course so risky for the filmmakers.
The production of this documentary took 19 months to complete. The documentary's director says it has unveiled a big secret called Taliban and clearly has responded to questions which have for long been formed in the minds of international audiences regarding the nature of the militant group.
The documentary film Life Among War Flags takes a deeper look at the lives of Afghan people who have tolerated years of war and bloodshed under different names. and have learned to show flexibility to survive. Salman Kojuri, Tehran.
Iran's ambassador to the United Nations says the Islamic Republic stands with the Cuban people and supports their fight against U.S. hostile and provocative policies. Najib Taxaravanchi condemned decades of U.S. sanctions and blockade against the Caribbean nation, especially at a time when Cuba is facing a coronavirus pandemic. The Iranian diplomat described the U.S. policies against Cuba as a gross violation of international rules. Over a week ago, protesters took to the streets of the Cuban capital, Havana, after calls for demonstration on social media networks. Cuba blamed the show of discontent on Washington, pursuing, quote, a policy of economic suffocation to provoke social unrest. The U.S. House of Representatives Speaker has kicked two Republicans out of a select committee she created to investigate the deadly January 6 protests on Capitol Hill. Nancy Pelosi says she rejects the appointments of Representatives Jim Jordan and Jim Banks, who are both staunch supporters of former President Donald Trump. Pelosi created the 30-member committee after Republican senators voted down a proposal to establish a 9/11-style commission to probe the unrest. Now, the House Speaker, House Minority Leader, that is, Kevin McCarthy, responded to Pelosi's move by pulling all Republicans from the panel. He said the GOP would not be part of what he called a sham process. Four people and one police officer were killed when pro-Trump protesters assaulted the Congress on January 6. Colin Campbell says Republicans are walking back on rhetoric against Trump because they know he is the lifeblood of the party right now.
We saw a lot of Republicans speaking vehemently against what happened, many of them speaking against the president's rhetoric, saying that the president was responsible. Well, we've seen them walk that back quite a bit since then, and because they know that the former president is still the lifeblood of the party right now. He's still wildly popular, even though we know that Joe Biden won the popular vote and the electoral vote. We still have to remember tens of millions of people still voted for the former president. So He still has his followers out there. He still wants to lead the Republican Party. He's still holding rallies. So he's still very much a relevant part of the Republican Party. A lot of Republicans know this. So they are, again, sticking their weight with the president, with the former president, because they know that he has a lot of influence. And that's why you're seeing a lot of Republicans who are a lot more committed to this about offering their perspectives with authenticity like they were doing just after the insurrection early January.
Colombia police have arrested 70 people following fresh anti-government protests across the country. The rallies followed Tuesday's demonstration that led to clashes between protesters and riot police. Dozens of civilian and security officers were wounded during Tuesday's protests. The government claims the armed groups have infiltrated the demonstrations. Colombia was rocked by weeks of protests that broke out late April in opposition to a proposed tax hike. In a bid to subdue the unrest, the government has now proposed a new tax reform plan. Political commentator Ahmed Al-Tuani says Colombia has one of the most unequal social systems in Latin America.
I've been to Colombia, and it's one of the most unequal countries in Latin America. This whole idea with the value-added tax to provide services, this is something that has been present in other Latin American countries and was just new to Colombia. But what Colombia and the government of Duque did wrong is that they put this tax onto the working class community as opposed to having it as a wealth tax or an income tax or something like that, right? And so you're seeing people who are struggling already because of the pandemic. Unemployment has jumped from, 6% up to 16% because of the pandemic. They're already struggling, and to add an additional tax to them, generally speaking, most Colombians felt that it was unfair, and they just got sick of this right-wing government that has ruled them for so many generations. And even as Duque pulled those tax reforms, I think it was 5 days after the start of these protests on April 28th, it's expanded into, we just don't want a right-wing government anymore. We want to have our human rights. We want to decrease the wealth gaps, and that's what they're asking for now from the legislative branch, who probably don't want to lose their popularity come election time next.
In Greece, police have fired tear gas and water cannon to disperse crowds protesting against mandatory coronavirus vaccinations. About 1,500 people that is took part in the march on Parliament in Athens against the government's COVID-19 inoculation drive. A similar rally was held last Wednesday and drew more than 5,000 people. The demonstrations were held despite Greece witnessing a surge in infections in recent weeks. Meanwhile, hundreds of people have gathered in France's capital to protest against the implementation of a health pass and compulsory vaccinations. Some protesters were carrying banners reading, quote, freedom to choose and hands off my natural immunity. The protests come as the French government seeks to rein in a fourth wave of COVID-19 infections in the country. Staying in the region, the British Meat Processors Association says the country's food supply chains are on the edge of failing as a workforce absence related to COVID-19 aggravates a critical shortage of labour. The meat industry body said some members of the association have reported that between 5 to 10% of their workers were asked to self-isolate by the government's COVID-19 tracing application. On Monday, England's car plants, railways and supermarkets also warned the government that the tracing app was wrecking the recovery and pushing supply chains to the brink of collapse. Alerts from the official app telling anyone identified as a contact of someone with the disease to self-isolate for 10 days have also reportedly disrupted schools and health care systems. The war of words between British Prime Minister and his former chief aide is ongoing amid growing calls for a public inquiry into a pandemic that left the country with one of the worst death tolls in the world last year. Saeed Poreza has more details.
Let the bodies pile on high in their thousands. A sentence seared into the memories of Britons, allegedly uttered by the British Prime Minister Boris Johnson as he reluctantly approved a second England-wide lockdown late last year. Faced with fury from relatives of the bereaved, Johnson and his senior ministers emphatically denied the allegation. The man who made that claim, his former top aide turned nemesis, Dominic Cummings, back with more.
This is terrible, but the people who are dying are essentially all over 80. And we can't kill the economy just because of people dying over 80.
Speaking to the British public broadcaster, he also questioned his former boss's fitness for his role and rebuked the government's pandemic performance. Just like that time, the government denies the allegations, saying the Prime Minister has taken the necessary action to protect lives and livelihoods, guided by the best scientific advice. But the numbers speak otherwise. England had one of the worst per capita deaths among the world's major economies last year, blamed by many on lockdown dithering by the government.
It was even more than that. It was an ideological predisposition towards laissez-faire capitalism and not caring about the fate of the poor. And that's deeply entrenched. They thought, let it spread through the population. Yes, the old will die, but they could use that crisis actually to generate pressure to further pursue the policies they're pursuing anyway, which are not protecting the NHS.
The new allegations come only days after Number 10 made England the first country to lift almost all COVID-related restrictions, despite the rising number of cases, mostly of the Delta variant.
If you look at this Tory cabinet, they look like people who are totally unfitted for office because they simply don't care about the lives and quality of lives of the vast majority of the working people of Britain. That's not their remit. They are there to protect big business. They've shown that time and again. The fact of Cummings and Johnson falling out is just once again shedding light on what they would really like to bury, and no doubt they will try and bury when they're forced to have a COVID inquiry.
A public inquiry into the government's pandemic response is yet to happen, and it remains to be seen if these latest revelations from the Prime Minister's former advisor will seriously puncture his opinion poll rates or lead to pressure from members of his own party for him to step down. Saeed Poreza, London.
Now, EU environment ministers say recent floods in Western Europe and extreme weather events around the globe must act as a wake-up call. Activists say the 27-country bloc's climate change goals are not ambitious enough. Jerome Hughes has more.
The cleanup operation continues in Belgium and Germany, the countries worst affected by last week's devastating floods following torrential rainfall. Senior figures from the European Commission have just attended a meeting of EU environment ministers.
50 degrees northwest Canada, 40 degrees in Siberia, 40 degrees in Central Europe. The floods you've mentioned, the droughts agriculture is dealing with, wildfires.
Last week, the European Commission unveiled plans to cut greenhouse gas emissions in the 27-nation bloc by 55% over the next 9 years. The Commission claims it's a matter of life and death.
The infernos and hurricanes we have seen over the last few weeks are only a very small window into what our future could look like.
Environmentalists point to what's happening right now. Raging wildfires in parts of the United States and Canada, severe flooding in regions of China, crippling droughts in areas of Iran, recent tornadoes in the Czech Republic. In order to save the planet, campaigners insist the EU must cooperate with big powers like Russia, China and Iran instead of pushing them away.
Official data shows transport accounts for 29% of pollution in the EU, but one large ship generates as much carbon dioxide per day as 80,000 cars. Of course, the aviation industry is another major player, and so too is agriculture. Experts say the key is to cut our energy consumption and be more efficient.
Therefore, what energy a country uses, what sources, what does it burn? Does it burn coal? Does it burn gas, which about has half the emissions of coal? Or does it do renewables, carbon-free sources? This is tremendously important for climate change.
Environmental groups say the EU needs to move faster and claims the bloc's goals are simply not ambitious enough. They are demanding that leaders agree on decisive action when they meet at a major UN climate change conference scheduled for October in Glasgow, Scotland. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
That brings an end to our news bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
In the limelight.
The Riyadh Abu Dhabi coalition of aggressors with unending supply of aircraft and weapons from the US and Britain have bombed Yemeni mosques, libraries, hospitals, schools, orphanages, power grids, waterworks, marketplaces, and residential quarters, while destroying the infrastructure, killing over 250,000 Yemeni men, women, and children, and making millions of people homeless. Yet, they completely failed to win the war. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by the staff of Kahan International. This article is published under the heading, Saudi-US Terrorism Takes a Takfiri Turn in Yemen. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. It seems the Saudi regime, along with the U.S., its principal backer in regional terrorism, has reached the end of the road in Yemen after six futile years of trying to break the indomitable spirit of resistance of the Ansarullah-led government in Sana'a. The Riyadh Abu Dhabi coalition of aggressors, with unending supply of aircraft and weapons from the U.S. and Britain, have bombed mosques, libraries, hospitals, schools, orphanages, power grids, waterworks, marketplaces, and residential quarters, while destroying the infrastructure, killing over 250,000 Yemeni men, women, and children, and making millions of people homeless. Yet, they completely failed to win the war. Now, in a last desperate attempt to avoid defeat that is hunting the dastardly invaders and the equally cowardly Americans, they're using the same stale self-defeatist tactics of decapitating prisoners of war through the use of the macabrely murderous Takfiri terrorists. In Syria, these Saudi-US-Israeli regime mercenaries tortured and decapitated captured civilians in the most brutal manner, and then released the videos in a bid to overawe the resistance, but to no avail. In Iraq, the same bloody scenarios were repeated by the Takfiri terrorists and soldiers who surrendered, as well as against the Sunni Kurds, the Shia Arabs and Turkmen, the Christian minority and Yazidis, before they were routed by the heroic Hashd-al-Shaabi forces. Earlier in Afghanistan, the beheading of the innocent had started on the orders of the Americans, the Saudis, and the Zionists as part of the devilish design to portray the Takfiri infidels as puritanical Muslims in order to tarnish the image of Islam. Nothing came out of such an inhumane tactic. And, on the contrary, the popular resistance forces, instead of losing courage, formed a formidable front to defeat Takfiri terrorists. The latest crimes against humanity of these ungodly Takfiris occurred the other day in Yemen, where two captured Yemeni soldiers were beheaded and videos of the sadistic act circulated. The hapless victims, whose headless bodies were discovered last Saturday, were identified as Sagr, Ghanem, Rashid Hussein al-Maliki, and Muhammad Ahmad Murshid Tawaf. As said before, this seems to be a desperate final attempt by the Saudis, the UAE, and the Americans to try to tilt the balance of war in their favor by providing open support to elements of Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula and Daesh terrorist groups. These brutal murders, however, far from weakening the spirit of resistance of Yemen army and the Ansarullah fighters, have made them more determined to defeat the invaders. We'll be right back. government in Sana'a has released a statement charging the Saudis and the Americans with responsibility for such cowardly acts of terrorism. Its statement notified the UN of these crimes against humanity, saying Takfiri groups are part of the U.S. regime scenario and policy, and the International Committee of the Red Cross, ICRC, must act immediately after the recent beheading of two Yemeni prisoners in Baida. It said the brutality and viciousness of this crime both pierced the hearts of freedom-loving Yemenis and exposed the connection between Al-Qaeda and Daesh elements and the Saudi-led coalition. The onus is now on the legitimate government of Yemen in Sana'a to mobilize all personnel, including the tribes in Marib and other places, against the Takfiri terrorists in order to weed them out of the Arabian Peninsula, along with the Saudis, the Emiratis, the Americans, and the Zionists.
Food for thought.
Salam and heartiest congratulations to you all on the auspicious day of Eid al-Adha, or the Feast of Sacrifice, in commemoration of God's acceptance of Abraham's sincere intentions and the saving of Ishmael from being slaughtered. If you're ready, here is a beautiful saying to contemplate upon from the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali, peace upon him. A day on which a person abstains from sin is indeed a day of aid or rejoicing for him or her.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
Axel Jawadi talks about the various keys of life and has brought about this book to be a companion for the very famous Mafatil Jiran, where one is a tool or the keys for paradise, and this book, of course, are the keys of life.
The Keys of Life, a program designed to tell you that what Islam gives you will help get you home with joy and faithfulness. So, well, listen to
The Keys of Life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. So all the keys away.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. My name is Sheikh Zaid Al-Salami. A few years ago, I started the course of wanting to commentate on a very important book that I believe is something that would be useful for everyone who reads it, and that is the book Mafatih al-Hayat, written by Ayatollah al-Uzma al-Sheikh Jawadi Amuli. We're now up to chapter 3 of part 2, and this chapter is talking about how to deal with non-Muslims. And of course, this is a very, very vast topic. It's never going to be something that we would be able to cover in one or two or a few sessions. But Ayatollah Jawadi Amuli points to some very, very important issues that we need to remember as Muslims. We've spoken about mu'mineen, we've spoken about fasiqeen, and now we were going to talk about those who appear to act as they are Muslims, but in reality, deep inside, they are far from that. You know, you say to someone, I'll be there at this time, you don't even turn up. Or I'll promise I'll give it back to you, you don't give it back. When you give your word, you break it. And how simple is this in today's society, unfortunately? We've already spoken about amana, and when you are entrusted with something, you betray it. There are three things that only a munafiq would ignore. This person would be known for that level of nifaq. There are three things that only a munafiq will know and that would ignore and would not honor. Number one, someone who is an elder in Islam, someone who has preceded us in faith, which means that they wouldn't respect, a munafiq wouldn't care about ذو شَيْبَةٍ فِي الْإِسْلَامِ. Number two, a reciter of the Qur'an, a memorizer of the Qur'an, someone who represents the Qur'an, munafiq wouldn't care, and a just ruler, a just leader. These are the qualities of a munafiq. Then there's a long hadith from Imam Ali alayhi salam, also in his advice to Kumail, avoiding a munafiq, avoiding someone who betrays, avoiding someone who is a zalim. You know, Imam Ali alayhi salam is saying, stay away from a munafiq, stay away from an unfaithful, a betraying person, stay away from a zalim, and make sure that you never mingle with them in any way, etc., etc. And then another hadith from Imam al-Sadiq to his companion Ishaq. Ultimately, if you have to associate yourself or sit in the presence of a munafiq, you know, deal with them only with your lisan, you know, just minimize the damage, if we could say, with your lisan, but your love should only be exclusive to the fellow mu'mineen.
Ayatollah Jawadi Amuli, the author of the book مفاتیح الحیات, The Keys of Life.
این مفاتیح باید دو جلد باشه. چندین سال این حرف گفته میشه.
This book, مفاتیح, ought to be in two volumes.
یه جلدش هی مفاتیح الجنان است. چه فرون دماز و سواب داره فرون رجوان است.
One volume, the present volume, مفاتیح الجنان, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc.
یه جلدش کم داره و اینه که فرون درخت کاری اینجور کم ثواب داره دعا هم داره ثواب هم داره.
But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree.
امام همونطوری که این رو گفته دارم گفته دید اون امامی که گفته اگر روزه بگیری ثواب داره همون امام گفته که اگر درخت بکاری اون ثواب داره.
Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
The stage has come now where we speak about how to deal with enemies, or how to deal with people who are not in favor of us, not liking us. And this is something, of course, very, very natural. Throughout the process of your life, you're always going to come across with certain people who might be different with you in their ideology, in their opinion, in their conduct, in their behavior. There might be a dispute, there might be certain issues that escalate to such a level where they become hostile towards you. Now, there are different kinds of that level of hostility that a person has towards somebody else, but it's never going to be something good or something positive. And as Muslims, we need to try as much as we can to stay away from any kind of enmity or hatred or creating of any level of discord or sedition or problems with other people. But how do we deal with someone who does turn around and become hostile to us? Now, sometimes someone might be offensive in the sense that they want to attack you verbally, maybe even physically. Sometimes, no, they're just an enemy, and they might even, you know, get to a stage where, you know, it is going to become very, very dangerous for you. In any case, what we can see in Ayatollah Jawadi's chapter here is that there are two types of enemies. One is an enemy who is an individual enemy, an enemy of yourself. Another is an enemy of your religion. Whatever the case may be, we know that there is the main enemy of all of us, and that is Shaytan. And we've mentioned a few times the verse in the Holy Quran where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala does refer to the Shaytan as an enemy. Inna Shaytan lakum aduun fattakhidhuhu aduwa, in Suratul Fatir, ayah number 6. And we understand that the munafiqeen are also a person's enemy. And we also understand that in some cases, a person or a group of people who want to attack the Muslim territory, want to attack Islam, are also classified as enemies. Of course, what we need to do is we set Islam as an example of how we deal with these kind of people. And it should never be the case where we react emotionally. It should never be the case where we, if I could say, take things into our own hand and escalate the problem, allow things to get worse and worse. Because the central focus of what it is that Islam teaches us is we need to have that passive approach towards those who might want to be aggressive towards us. Does this mean that we allow them to tread all over us? Absolutely not.
Driving past, walking fast to the field of dreams, hear the children's cries.
There was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time. Memories fade like a dusty window pane, and you can't see your past no more. The only thing that remains is that feeling of warmth in your heart that will always be there, be there.
The light.
In the US, creative designers are trying to raise awareness about the environmental issues in a fun and playful way. A climate change themed mini golf course has recently opened to public in New York City. It consists of 18 holes, each one featuring an environmental problem or a potential solution like habitat loss, energy inefficiency, and emissions. Designed by local artists, the course is made with recycled materials.
Climate change and the environment are such important topics right now, and important issues that faces all of us now and will face us in future generations. So by bringing the environmental issues to the forefront in a fun, playful way like mini golf, it really sparks the conversation and helps folks understand the scope of the issue.
Visitors have welcomed the idea, saying it's both entertaining and educational. Organizers say all of the money made from the golf course will go to two local environmental groups. Let's go to Ukraine to meet the world's oldest tennis player, who has been playing the sport for over half a century. Leonid Stanislavski, now 97 years old, has competed in various world championships. When he was a 30-year-old gymnast, he started training tennis three times a week. The Guinness World Record holder is now practicing for the 2021 Super Seniors World Championship, which will be held in Mallorca, Spain. Stanislavski believes that people can play tennis at any age.
It's an elegant type of sport. It's good physical exercise. It is a beautiful game, and there is one more thing about tennis. You can play tennis no matter what age you are.
The world's oldest tennis player revealed his secret to a long life, a combination of good genes and regular sport. His goal is to live to 100 years old and take on prominent tennis player Roger Federer. The old athlete also wishes to make a parachute jump. The largest museum in the world dedicated to the study of space has made its debut in Shanghai, China. Inspired by the orbits of celestial bodies, the layout of the building has no straight lines or right angles. The museum, designed by New York-based Anid Architects, is intended to create an immersive experience for visitors to engage in a real astronomical phenomenon. For instance, visitors can take a trip into a starry night in the optical Planetarium Theater.
What we aim to create is a real environment for people to look up to the starry sky. To achieve this goal, we've installed a high-precision planetarium projector at the center of the theater, which can project the sharp spots of stars on the screen with countless optical fibers. The demonstration effects are very vivid.
After moving through the museum's galleries and curved hallways, the final area visitors pass through is the sky space of the Inverted Dome. The viewing area of the Inverted Dome is about reducing almost all separation between people and the stars. The opening follows a five-year construction process in the city's Lingang district.
French artist has created a huge cardboard installation in the shape of the Hanging Bridge. The artwork is 18 meters in length and hovers above Rome's Tiber River with the help of three gigantic helium-filled balloons. Olivier, who created the work, was inspired by famous Italian Renaissance architect and sculptor Michelangelo. The Italian master had been tasked with the constructing a bridge on Tiber to connect the gardens of the Villa Farnesina to the Farnese Palace. However, he died before he could complete the venture. Now Michelangelo's mission has been accomplished centuries after his demise by one of his admirers. Every year, a lot of animals lose their life due to various kinds of accidents, but some of them are lucky enough to get a second chance. A Perseus, the Greek cat, is one of them. The stray feline was taken to a vet in the city of Larissa last year after a terrible accident. The vets had to perform three surgeries, but Perseus lost the same number of limbs. However, he managed to stay alive and was given prosthetic legs. Perseus has adapted perfectly to his new limbs and now uses them to get around. He has also managed to snatch the heart of his saviors as visitors at the clinic where he cured have grown. The Japanese art collective has created a mesmerizing environment in a forest where nature and technology come together. In the mountains of Kyushu in southern Japan, the nature comes to life after the dark. Flowers and trees are illuminated in a glowing ripple shine, while rocks turn colorful with light installations. A waterfall made of light pours gently on a bright rock. Some rocks have calligraphy, and artificial pond projects colorful fish too. The artists behind the work say their aim is to unite technology and nature.
The thing is, sometimes people think it's a digital and nature is completely it's against each other. But in the same time, we think it's in the digital and the nature is it's quite easy to be merged.
The Japanese team also wants to raise awareness about the original beauty of the nature, which they say is often ignored. To remind people of that, they hold exhibitions combining projections, sound, and carefully designed spaces. So far, the group has organized several art shows of this kind. Animals have been providing protection and service to people since time immemorial. They have not only been the source of food like meat, butter and milk, but also served humans by eating plants toxic to them. Authorities in New York City have taken 24 goats from a nearby farm to the Riverside Park in Manhattan to munch on invasive weeds. They say it's an environmentally friendly win-win for the species removal at the park. The goats get to feast on overgrown bush, and Riverside Park Conservancy doesn't have to dump harsh chemicals on weeds. Park officials say it's both healthy for the goats and good for the environment.
As part of our woodland restoration initiative, 2 years ago, we unleashed a very hungry group of goats into a stretch of the park that had been overrun with invasive plants. And wow, did they exceed expectations. We called it Gotham because we put the goat in Gotham. They chowed down on Japanese knotweed. They noshed on porcelain berry. They snacked on multiflora rose. They easily traversed the hard-to-reach terrain behind me and gulped down poison ivy without even giving it a second thought. Since goats are naturally effective weed whackers, putting them to work in Gotham is like treating them to an all-you-can-eat buffet. It's healthy for the goats, and it's good for the environment. That's farm to table.
People visiting the goats at the zoo say these animals are emotionally intelligent and connect with people. Goats are an ingenious approach to weed removal, eating species dangerous to humans like poison ivy. of the 24 Goats, 5 will call Riverside Park his home through the end of August. For some others, the public can vote to determine which Goat will be crowned the greatest of all time. The winner will be announced by the end of the summer.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Singapore unveils one of the world's biggest floating solar panel farms in a bid for quadrupling its solar energy production by 2025. The farm is as big as 45 football fields. It includes 122,000 solar panels. The panels are designed to last for 25 years, and drones will be used to assist with maintenance. The farm is located on a reservoir in western Singapore and will generate enough electricity to power its 5 water treatment plants. It puts Singapore among the few countries in the world with a water treatment system fully powered by green energy. The farm can reduce Singapore's carbon emissions by 32,000 tons annually. Floating solar panels perform up to 15% better than conventional rooftop panels. That's because of the cooling effect of water, and that shading from other buildings does not affect them. Singapore is currently developing 4 other floating solar panel projects. Maybe kittens are considered the cutest baby animals by many of us, but just wait to see this baby hippo, which was born during a full moon. The male cub was born in a Mexican zoo last month. He weighs 30 kilos upon birth. Since then, he has spent most of his time bonding with his mother. The vets in the zoo say he is healthy, playful, strong, and a bit hyperactive. They say some of his habits are surprisingly similar to that of a horse or a dolphin. Generally, reproduction among zoo hippos is not a common practice. Therefore, newborn calves are signs of high quality of the lives and habitats of their parents. A zoo in central France is welcoming the birth of a male giraffe after 15 months of waiting. The calf is named after Melman, the giraffe character in the Madagascar movie franchise. He was born on Sunday in a Bouval Zoo park. He is 170 centimeters tall and weighs 55 kilograms. Zookeepers say Melman is a special baby.
A giraffe birth here. It's our second birth since we've had the group of females established for a few years. So for us, it's still quite an important and exceptional event because it's not every day that we have a giraffe birth.
The giraffe keepers say Melman stood on his feet for the first time 45 minutes after being born. Since zoos have opened in France, visitors can enjoy seeing little Melman playing around with his mother. The birth of the baby giraffe is good news for wildlife preservation, as according to estimates, the number of the animal in the wild has dropped by about 30% since the 1980s.
The issue of marine trash has long worried scientists and environmentalists. Now a French engineer has invented a robot to help clean ocean waste. The Jellyfish Bot is a remote-controlled electric-powered boat that helps clean rubbish from the surface of the water. It's 70 centimeters long and 70 wide, almost the size of a suitcase. The robot can collect everything from plastic bottles to masks and even oil and petrol. Despite its wide-ranging utility, Jellyfish Bot has a rather simple mechanism.
To collect trash, you have to do something as simple as possible, because otherwise, if we put too complicated mechanisms, it can get blocked and things can get stuck in the system. We designed the robot with a slide mechanism that goes towards a net, so we fill up the net, we take back the net, and that's the end of it.
The trash collecting robot is being used at around 15 ports in France, lightening the workload of local cleaners. It has also been exported to countries including Japan, Norway, and Singapore. The makers have also developed an autonomous version of the boat.
Malaysians at a vaccination center in the city of Kuching have witnessed a surprising scene. A T-Rex turned up to get his COVID-19 jab. Fitness instructor Kenny Sia dressed up in a dinosaur costume to amuse people, doesn't he look fabulous, and protect himself. Sia said he made the decision to lift up the spirits of frontline health workers, is exhausted by vaccinating over 5,000 people a day. People rushed to take pictures with him, hailing his appearance and historic. Funny. A giant 3D cat has risen to fame in the Japanese capital, Tokyo, bringing joy to citizens amid the COVID-19 pandemic. A massive billboard featuring the cat has been installed in one of Tokyo's busiest districts. The realistic-looking cat on a 4K resolution screen appears every few minutes between advertisements. Depending on the time of day, the cat appears differently and sometimes meowing at people walking by. The companies that set up the billboard hope that they can cheer people up during the dark era of the coronavirus pandemic. The display has already caused a frenzy in the city and among the social platforms, with many expressing joy and amazement at the technology.
Peru is full of natural wonders worthy of appreciation in each of its regions. A zoo in the capital Lima has now unveiled an incredibly cute and adorable Andean alpaca calf to attract visitors amid dwindling zoo-goers due to the coronavirus pandemic. This fairy baby alpaca named Paquita is just 1 month old and was introduced to the public on the eve of the 200th anniversary of Peru's independence from Spain. The zoo has also displayed its families of llamas, alpaca, and vicuña. The three are members of South American camelids biological family and are traditionally valued for their soft and warm wool. They live in the Andes Mountains, which lay thousands of meters above sea level. Peruvians are proud of the history of wools associated with these species, which have common ancestors with camels.
A diverse range of programs. Youth. Spirituality. Culture. Eastern.